Wintrust Business Lunchtime. Elise Glink is the owner of Think Glink Media and Best Money Moves. She's the co-host of This Week in Wealth with Tom Fortino. That's Sunday mornings at 7 a.m. where they take a whole hour to analyze some of your economic and household financial questions. Welcome back, Elise. How are you today?
Oh, enjoying this beautiful day, John. You?
Man, amen to that. I'll enjoy it at 2.
Right.
But I'm enjoying it indoors today, too. Let's talk about how much people are enjoying their household income, their debt-to-income ratio. What's the trend right now?
Well, the Federal Reserve issued its new Economic Well-Being of Households report. You know, from time to time, the Fed takes a look at how we're all doing. And unfortunately, we're doing a little bit worse than we were last year when we were coming off the pandemic. We had a little bit more money in our pockets last year. This year, 35% say they're doing worse off than they were 12 months ago. That number's up a little bit. We're seeing that about half, 54% of Americans have emergency savings, 3 months of savings, meaning that they can pay their bill. That's down, actually, from almost 60%. So that was down quite a bit. And 18% can't pay their bills in full each month.
When you say 35% say they are doing worse off, I wonder if that means 65% say they're doing as well or better. I mean, is the glass half full to you when you see 35% doing worse off, or is it half empty?
Yeah, well, no, to your point, 65% are doing okay. They say they're doing fine. You know, there's always the top, like, 1% that's saying, why can't everyone do as well as me? I'm doing great. But what we saw was that the numbers are changing to the negative a little bit. So that's what concerns me, right? That number, 35%, was, I think, around 31% when they last did this survey. And in the fourth quarter of 2022, and this, I should point out, this report comes from a survey that was done at the end of the year, or just after the end of the year. 73% of adults in the fourth quarter of 2022 said they were either doing okay or living comfortably, and that was down 5 percentage points from the prior year. Mm-hmm, and it's about the lowest levels that the Fed has seen since 2016.
You know, I'm looking at the graph now, and now that you mention it, 35% say they're doing worse off, is as high as it's been since they've been keeping records, or at least back to 2014.
Yeah, it's a number that's really concerning. And what happened in the pandemic, I mean, if you look down, you know, you can see the graph and I can, but our listeners can't. So we'll describe it for them. But in 2019, you were at about the lowest level. 2018, 2019, you were only at 14% or just under 15% saying they were worse off. And now we're all the way at 35%. And so you can see that the pandemic has really caused people to either think that they're doing worse off or they truly are.
That's an interesting point. But really, now that you mention it, 2021, that would be the throes of the pandemic. The percentage of people who said they're doing worse off than they were a year ago was 22%. We are, as you said a moment ago, 35%. And even in 2022, that number has been going up to where we are today. So
yeah. I think one of the things to keep in mind here is that during the pandemic, the federal government provided extraordinary financial support to people, right? We stopped paying our bills. You know, in a lot of cases, the government put money right into our accounts. You didn't, if you had student loan debt, you didn't have to pay it. And so even with all of that, so many people lost their jobs. It took so long for somebody to get them back. You know, then people started finding their footing in 2021. So we saw the number kind of decline a few percentage points. And this year, boy, it is just zooming up. And I'm not sure if people are really getting the message that there is a recession on the way, or, you know, internally, they're just coping with a lot more bills and expenses. In combination with this, John, we're also seeing credit card debt and other kinds of debt at the highest levels they've ever been at. So that could be contributing as well.
Talking to Elise Glink from Think Glink Media about, well, let's talk a little bit about real estate. I saw the report and it said, among other things, that in some high-priced areas, prices are going down, and in modest price areas, prices are going up across the country, right?
Yeah, it's really a conundrum, John. You know, normally when interest rates go as high as they are, and today's interest rates are super high. I mean, if you've got the best credit score out there, let's say a 740 or 750 or above in terms of mortgage interest rates, you're still paying almost 7% for a 30-year fixed rate loan. And if you've got, you know, a 700, which is the average credit score, you're almost paying 7.5%. And you would think that those kinds of interest rates are really driving down the price of homes. But there's so little out there right now.
Yeah.
Inventory's so low that there's nothing to buy. So people are, you're seeing multiple bid offers in many cases.
Friends of ours put their house on the market and in a couple of days got an offer over ask. Because I think it was just a very nice home, and it was competitively priced. But I think that was about the inventory out there. Somebody found that house and thought, we're not going to find another one like this, and they bought it on the spot.
Yeah, there's very, very few for sale signs. If you drive around, particularly in the North Shore, which has one of the lowest amounts of inventory relative to the number of people, almost anywhere in the country right now, there should be more homes in the market, but what's happened is people locked in those super low interest rates that we had for a long time, and where are they going to go? And so what I hear from people is, I'm just riding this out. Well, unless we're going to start building a huge amount of homes out there, I think we're all going to be in this stasis for quite a bit. The National Association of Realtors has reported that the amount of sales compared to last year is down about 20%.
I believe that, and yet I'm just reading from this report, prices rose by at least 10% from the previous year in Milwaukee, Dayton, Oklahoma City. Chicago's seen a bit of an uptick. I don't think it's 10%, but we weren't overpriced to begin with.
So no.
That helped us.
You know, it helps a lot. I mean, you are seeing a drop of about, you know, 10% or even more in some places like San Francisco that really was very overpriced, or New York. But I wonder if that's a real thing, John, or if it's just that fewer $200 million homes sold to Beyonce last week.
Yes, I heard that.
Right?
Don't get me started on that.
I just have to tell you, John, I got yet another press release this week. I didn't even bring this up this morning. And it said that for the price of the most expensive home that's for sale in New York, or that sold last in 2019, it was $240 million for this condo. You could buy 864 homes in Chicago. I mean, that swings your numbers just a little bit. It has to.
So Beyonce and Jay-Z's home went for how much?
I believe the one they're buying is $200 million, but they're also keeping the $88 million one they already have. Maybe it's going to be a rental. Who knows?
What are you going to do with that place? You know, like these homes that have 13 bathrooms, you can only pee so much. I don't understand, unless it is an investment. But I don't know that at that price point, at least, you can be guaranteed you're going to make a decent return on your $200 million because you got to find another buyer.
So I'm going to put it out there that this isn't about price appreciation as much as it is about keeping cash occupied in something that's a grade A investment, something that you might have, if you're worried about the stock market. And I've talked to a number of very, very smart investors over the last couple of months. And to a person, they said they're keeping cash on the sidelines. They want to make sure it's protected. Well, you can't put it in a bank, right? You can't. You're not going to put it in crypto. And so where are you going to put a large amount of cash when you know, have it to, you need to do something with it and you want to make sure it doesn't lose value? Real estate and grade A properties has always been the thing that people around the world who have a lot of money have invested in, which is why we've seen properties in Miami skyrocket, New York, San Francisco, Los Angeles. It's not a huge surprise that Jay-Z and Beyonce are thinking the same thing.
$200 million. Wow. Okay, one last thing. We've talked a lot in the last couple of weeks about tipping. I got about a minute left. What's the trend and what are you hearing about the business of tipping?
Well, everybody wants to be tipped these days. And I don't know about anybody else who's listening to this, but boy, it drives me nuts. Yes, you're going to serve me a coffee at a Starbucks. I'm definitely going to give you a tip. But I don't know. It seems like everybody wants a tip these days. And I'm thinking it's not just, you know, your coffee shop barista, but you're also seeing it from service workers. So your accountant will charge you a fee and then ask for a tip on top of it,
for example. Your accountant?
Yes, I have now seen, I've seen it all. John, I'm amazed. And I bet if you asked people who is asking for a tip, not if they're giving it, but who's asking for it, you'll see it come some very unusual opportunities for tipping that seem to be stepping up. And so that is the finding of a new LendingTree survey. They said that almost a quarter of Americans feel that they are pressured to tip now, and that the high frequency of tipping opportunities is why 41% of Americans have changed their buying habits. They just don't want to be asked for a tip.
This Week in Wealth with Tom Fortino and Elise Glink will come your way Sunday morning at 7 a.m. You can always check out Elise's writings and musings at thinkglink.com. Elise, join us again next week. Thanks for your thoughts.
Always a pleasure.
Thanks for dialing us in here at WGN Radio, a Chicago-based prayer app. We'll get to that in a minute. First, let's start with the whole AI scene. Jim Dahlke joins us, the national editor at American Inno. Click on chicagoinno.com. Hi, Jim. Welcome back. So let's get started on AI in Chicago. You said Chicago startups should not fear AI, and here's why. What are you writing about here?
Yeah. Hey, John. So, you know, we really took a look here at the generative AI craze that's going on in the tech world right now and kind of how it impacts Chicago. So generative AI, of course, is this new wave of artificial intelligence technology that's capable of generating text, images, videos, other media in response to prompts. Obviously, ChatGPT is the real big player in this space right now. But, you know, we're seeing a lot of established growth stage, you know, well-known Chicago companies start incorporating this technology into their businesses to kind of make their processes a little easier and more efficient. And, you know, one sort of interesting example of this is a company in Chicago called Project 44. They're a logistics tech company that valued at over $1 billion, raised hundreds of millions in funding. And essentially they're a tech platform to help give some more visibility into the supply chain, to help shippers track their goods across the country and match to carriers and all kinds of just like tech intelligence there. And what they're able to do with this generative AI technology that they've created is allowing these companies to have even easier access to finding out where their stuff is, right? So these companies can use this generative AI technology to quickly locate where their packages are across the country, and essentially makes customer service at lightning speed. And so we kind of go through a bunch of different examples of how generative AI is being used within these kind of growing tech companies in Chicago and the efficiencies it creates. You know, of course, the big, concern from people is, hey, what does this mean for eliminating jobs? Or is generative AI going to be this huge, eliminator of human workforce? And these companies say it's not. They don't plan to cut positions. In fact, some of these companies are saying generative AI is going to allow us to hire more people, focus on other, sort of less mundane tasks, and really allow the technology to take over, some of the projects that are, certainly very time consuming for humans to participate in. So lots of Chicago companies kind of working on generative AI right now. And really, it's been interesting to watch.
I think I get a little lost in this, and we've talked about it a lot, all of the shows here at WGN. But how is AI, as we're talking about it these days, different than computer programs, which have done logistics and have done efficiencies for businesses? And I understand that they can now write your term paper or create art, but is what we're talking about here fundamentally different than software that's been in existence all along?
It is fundamentally different, and certainly the narrative component, I think, is what's so fascinating here. It's, it's not that, think about it in terms of just like a Google search, for example. You can do a Google search and find relevant links and to any query that you have. But, ChatGPT is able to provide, a detailed answer to your question or put together, something a lot more informative than just sort of a simple search with this kind of language-based prompt technology that it has. The funny thing about artificial intelligence in Chicago is that, you know, obviously there's a lot of people in the journalism industry worrying about, you know, ChatGPT currently right now. Hey, could a robot take over my job? You know, writing up a news story, can ChatGPT do that just as well as a human can? We were actually having this exact same conversation more than 10 years ago when a Chicago startup actually called Narrative Science came onto the scene and was able to write baseball game recap stories by taking the data from the box score and spinning out basically a recap story about the same quality as a human could. And so we were having these same conversations, you know, more than 10 years ago, well before OpenAI and ChatGPT came on the scene. And so, yeah, Narrative Science, really interesting one. They were acquired by Salesforce a few years ago. But yeah, I mean, it's funny how kind of things come around full circle, because, you know, we were having these sort of same kind of artificial intelligence conversations more than a decade ago.
But if you took the box score and said, okay, you can see what happened, now write a story about it. It might be accurate to the letter, but it wouldn't tell the story about the mound visit where the pitcher got animated. And sometimes that's an integral or at least an interesting part of the game. We're going to lose the human touch here, aren't we?
That's exactly right. And it's the same point that was made at the time where Narrative Science said, hey, this frees up the sports writer to do more impactful work. This allows them to write that deep dive piece, that really to do that extra interview, right? So, hey, we're going to take the game recap off your plate so you can work on the investigative piece you've been putting off for weeks, right? So
okay. It's
really allowing for a different workflow, right?
I got you. But as long as they do that, you know, I'm worried that in this environment, if we were just talking about newspapers, for instance, that they would say, hey, the robot can write the story. We can fire the writer because we're not going to do the interesting human interest story anymore. Let's hope that your vision is the path that is going to be taken.
Well, I mean, you can look at sort of the BuzzFeed and BuzzFeed News situation currently, right? Like BuzzFeed News just axed their entire, you know, news division while, you know, at the same time sort of using artificial intelligence on the BuzzFeed side to create their quizzes, right? So the BuzzFeed is really doubling down on using artificial intelligence to create these quizzes where people can go online and participate in different types of quizzes that BuzzFeed had. And that's not exactly saying one is the result of the other, but BuzzFeed sort of very clearly has said, hey, we are deprioritizing news, investigations, et cetera, in replacement of robot-generated quizzes.
Talk to me about Grapefruit Health.
Yeah, this is a really new, interesting startup in Chicago. They're tackling the issue of the workplace staffing shortages across the healthcare space. They just raised $1.3 million. They connect healthcare organizations with clinical students, essentially outsourcing them to be telemedicine providers. So rather than a hospital system having to do telehealth all on their own, Grapefruit Health comes in here and says, hey, we've got clinical students who could take this for you. So if a healthcare organization's got some staffing issues, they're not really prepared to, you know, use their current staff for telehealth, they're connecting them to these clinical students across the country. So really, you know, kind of a win-win, right, to kind of get these clinical students some extra work and to free up the staff from the health organizations and provide them with a really interesting telehealth solution there. So, yeah, Grapefruit Health just raised $1.3 million to grow its platform.
Chicago-based prayer app? I don't know a Chicago-based prayer app. What is this?
Yeah, this is a company called Hallow, H-A-L-L-O-W. They just raised $50 million. Really interesting company. And they've raised a total of $105 million to date since they were founded in 2018. This is an app that's essentially, think of it like, Calm or Headspace, but specifically geared towards Catholics. So this is prayer and meditation all sort of through a Catholic and Christian lens. This app has been downloaded more than 10 million times. Hallow says it's the first religious app that's made it into Apple's top 10 apps. So some really serious growth from these guys. They've partnered with folks like Mark Wahlberg and Mario Lopez, who are promoting it on their end as well. And so you've really seen some incredible growth here for Hallow, several years old here now, really seeing some serious growth. And, hey, 10 million downloads is not too shabby.
I want to go back to AI for just a second here. An apparently AI-generated photo This is an AI-generated photo. You were using the word generative a minute ago, faking an explosion near the Pentagon in Washington, D.C. went viral. The Arlington Police Department has confirmed that the image and accompanying reports were fake. But when the news was shared by a reputable Twitter account on Monday, the market briefly dipped. A fake image of an explosion near the Pentagon may have been created by artificial intelligence tools. The image appearing to show a massive cloud of smoke near a building and claims that there had been an explosion near the Pentagon started circulating earlier today. Associated claims were fake, according to the Arlington Police Department, et cetera, et cetera. How about that?
Yeah, I mean, boy, you almost cannot believe anything you see on the internet today, which is really a shame. We're going to have to really get over some pretty major hurdles here before, we can sort of allow generative AI and the sort of very, very advanced artificial intelligence to continue playing deep roles, in our culture right now, because the technology is moving a lot faster than we are.
Jim Dahlke, national editor. Click on ChicagoNO.com. Thank you, Jim.
Thanks, Sean.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. Let's go into the WGN Radio Newsroom. We've got more business news with Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. The property that houses the Apple Store at North and Clyburn in Chicago is up for sale. A venture based in Mexico has put the property at 801 West North Avenue on the market. It includes 18,000 square feet of space. The venture acquired the store in 2010 for $10.5 million. The current asking price hasn't been disclosed. Apple has a lease on the property that initially expired in 2020. Crane's reports include several five-year extension options. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Here's the business of food with Steve Alexander.
And I'm going to tell you about an entry-level job that pays six figures after I thank the Chevy Silverado HD for sponsoring us today. Experience your life in HD. Visit ChevyDriveChicago.com. Okay.
Starting pay in our industry, we're talking six figures plus.
The job? Over-the-road truck driver, which means being away from home on a regular basis, but...
Regional drivers who are staying at home each night, even those guys, you know, we're talking $70,000, $80,000.
And you don't even need a truck.
No, absolutely not.
Matt Hart is the executive director of the Illinois Trucking Association.
Plenty of trucking companies will hire you today.
Huge demand nationwide because a lot of baby boomer truckers retired during the pandemic.
There's about an 80,000 driver shortage, and if we don't do something about it, that's going to jump to about 160,000 by 2030.
Is there an age limit to be a trucker?
Inside the state of Illinois is 18 years old, but if you want to drive across the state lines, you've got to be 21 years old.
No. I mean an age limit for people of a certain age.
There is no maximum age. As long as you're safe, you can drive a truck, as long as you want. I was talking to a member today. They've got a driver who's in their 80s.
Getting a commercial driver's license is not like it used to be.
For the days of just going in and getting your license, those days are gone. You've now got to demonstrate to the Illinois Secretary of State that you received training from somebody who's on this registry.
Which can cost several thousand dollars in some cases, and that's why the Illinois Farm Bureau is offering scholarships.
That is correct. Illinois Farm Bureau's board of directors identify the need to help support individuals that are wishing to obtain their commercial truck driver's license.
Jennifer Smith is with the IAA Foundation. That's the charitable arm of the Illinois Farm Bureau.
The trucking industry is critical to agriculture.
Or, as Al Pacino put it in The Irishman,
if you got it, a truck brought it.
And to apply for the Farm Bureau's trucker scholarships,
our website is iaafoundation.org.
That's iaafoundation.org.
6 days on the road and I'm gonna make it home tonight.
From the farm to your belly, today's National Craft Distillery Day and National Vanilla Pudding Day. I'm Steve Alexander, and that's the business of food on 720 WGN.
Dan Perillo, you know that name, the CEO of Beef Shack, joins us on WGN Radio as we highlight another growing concern here in the Chicago area. Hey, Dan, how are you today?
Hey, John, I'm great. Thank you. Thank you for having me on here.
You just opened in St. Charles, right?
We did, right on the corner of Randall and 64, which is North Avenue, right directly on the corner.
So how many Beef Shacks are there now?
This is our fifth one, John.
How long have you guys been in business? When did this first spin off for you guys?
Well, we took it about 6 years ago. We took the concept from someone who started the one location. And then we've built another 5 stores here, and it's just been great. And we're opening another 3 stores later this year.
So talk about these beef sandwiches then. What do you serve at Beef Shack?
So, and again, it's a little different. It's more of a hybrid beef sandwich, I would call it. We have what's called the cheesy beef on garlic, which it is a little different, where we put garlic on our roll, which is made by Toronto Baking Company. It's a special roll made for us. We put garlic on there, obviously the beef, put the mozzarella cheese, and we throw it through a conveyor oven. And, man, does that taste change everything.
Do you have a sauce or a jardiniere or a gravy you put on there?
Sure. We have, of course, the gravy we put on there, just like a traditional, again, made specially for us that we put on there. A lot of people ask for it dipped, which is, very popular. And then we've got our fresh cut fries, which is great, too.
So you guys don't have a 10-page menu, do you?
That's what's great about this, John. That's why I call us the In-N-Out Burger of beef sandwiches. We have about 6 things on our menu. We have hot dogs. We have chicken sandwiches. We have one chicken sandwich. We have burgers. We have a salad. And that's really about it, our beef sandwich, obviously.
Is it tempting to expand the menu, or do you think that's a mistake?
Yeah, I really do, John. I think that is a mistake. My philosophy is, and I've got presented many things, including, my family that's in the business with me. You want to change it? I don't. I want to keep it simple. I want every item we have to serve, which is a wow item. And if you get our stuff, we have a grilled cheese on there, which is, again, it's a wow grilled cheese. It's just different. Same with our cheesy beef. The hot dogs are Chicago hot dog. Everything we do is really good. And I don't really want to change that. I want to keep it the same for now.
I'm thinking of a restaurant that has this multi-page menu. And I think sometimes, and I'm not thinking of Portillo's. It's kind of just a local place. But I think if you have 10 pages of stuff, maybe not all of these are as good, But if you have 6 things, I go, the 6 things you are probably pretty rock solid.
Exactly. And that's the way I've been doing this a long time. And my philosophy is, again, smaller is better in this situation where the menu, everybody, when you get up to the menu and you're looking, your head's up, cocked up, looking at the menu, it's pretty simple to figure out what you want. Obviously, half our orders are beef sandwiches, but then we got a great chicken sandwich. Obviously, hot dogs are popular in Chicago. Fresh cut fries are 20% of our sales, John. So that tells you a little bit.
You guys pride yourself in fresh ingredients. Did I read you don't have refrigerators there?
We don't have freezers. We have refrigerators, but no freezers. Yep, nothing's frozen. Everything's fresh.
So the new one is opening up in St. Charles. Then you're in Oswego, Glen Ellen, North Aurora.
That's right.
So 6 is the total now, right?
Yeah, well, we have 5 right now. And Oswego will be open probably July or August. And then we're doing Glen Ellen. Probably that will be open in October. And we're hoping by the end of the year to squeeze in North Aurora, too. And then my goal is another 6 next year. We're putting up 6 next year. I'd like to get into the Schaumburg area.
I was just going to say, I bet a lot of towns are raising their hand, or at least some of your fans are going, hey, come here, come here. What a nice problem to have, huh?
It really is. And if you ever get a chance, John, the food is just exceptional. And that's what really sells the whole thing is the food. And, you have to have great food, but if you can't back it up with great service, then the concept will not go. And that's why I'm doing it all internally. Even though we are a franchise, I own all of them right now, but I am able to franchise, but I'm just looking for the right group that can, withstand building the brand just like we're doing now.
Beef Shack just opened in St. Charles. CEO of Beef Shack is Dan Perillo. Okay, Dan, well done. Good luck to you guys.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Thanks for your help, John.
Yeah, it's our pleasure.